Hello, everybody who owns this wonderful DVD collection. This is a Simpsons episode number 2F21, The Springfield Connection, original air date May 7th, 1995. This is the voice of Matt Groening, Dan Castellaneta.
This is Yardley Smith. I do the voice of Lisa Simpson.
David Merkin, showrunner, executive producer. That was not a James Bond parody. I don't know. Maybe James Bond took it from us, but I think ours is first.
John Collier, writer of the episode.
This is Matt Groening, voice of Danny Castellaneta.
Mark Kirkland, director of this episode.
That was just really me doing Matt Groening. He's not really here.
This, by the way, is obviously based on the Hollywood Bowl, which has just had a complete acoustic redo because the acoustics at the Hollywood Bowl were horrible and always have been horrible, and now they're a little bit better, but that's kind of what it looks like.
Deliciously satirical. I wonder if anyone else...
Now, this episode... John, do you have any memories about the origins of this episode you'd like to share with the audience?
You know I do, David. Okay. This actually came from Mike Reese, who's a longtime Simpsons writer. His wife, Denise, decided at one point to become a Los Angeles City cop.
No, I didn't know that.
She wanted to do it. She got very serious about it because she wasn't quite sure what to do. And within about 4 hours, Mike's agent, Gavin Pallone, had Denise working for his mother.
But she still carries a gun, and I've been shot by her 3 times.
And a bag.
I got arrested by her. Now I'm outraged to find out she's not a cop.
Not really a cop. Yeah, she still pulls this. This three-card Monty, if you haven't seen it, is just rampant in New York City. It's on every street corner and in the right area. So that's where all this fun came from.
I made a lot of money from betting on it.
Don't blame me.
It's people like you who are ruining our downtown promenades and piazzas.
Piazza, an excellent comedy word, by the way. There's just we do sit there and we think of words that are going to be funny said by certain characters. And so,
piazza.
There you go. Homer can make everything funny. That's the great thing. I do enjoy the fact, you don't see this often enough, as characters being so out of shape they can't even run half a block. And Dan, a beautiful, beautiful, and this makes me laugh forever, by the way, a beautiful, beautiful, out-of-breath performance.
This reminds me of my days trying out for any high school team.
And Mark, I love the hair coming up behind Snake in that shot.
I'm overall pleased with the Ollie animation on this episode. The compositions are nice, and there's lots of deep perspective.
It's funny, because I was never satisfied with the animation, but please go on.
I'm easy to satisfy, and you're not.
No, it looks great, and there's a lot of great lighting in this episode, and a lot of atmosphere. You know, it really
has... It's very cinematic.
It is. There are these Wiggum hair mistakes in this, though. Are there not? I think Wiggum's hair goes from blue to black, or is that at night, or...
I didn't notice that.
Oh, okay. His hair was just black. Did you see that, Matt?
That's Marge.
And you see, this is why this is so good. Everybody pays very careful attention to every detail.
I'm watching the show. I'm not listening to what you're saying.
Wiggum's hair was black in that... By the way, this is the kind of thing that if we have, a color screening or even an animatic, Matt notices. It's fun to sit next to Matt because he notices things as an artist very, very visually. And he'll say, look at that guy in the background. I'm going, gee, I'm watching the story. There's this guy, and Matt's concerned with the size of the eyes of the guy. But that's the kind of thing that if you draw, you know, if that's the way your mind works, it just goes right to it, you know.
Of course. I love
it. When the animation is really well done and you're seeing virtuoso artists at work, then you're on board with the story and the jokes come easier. And when there are little glitches and mistakes and stuff, you start wondering, maybe I'm not...
It's
It's very important stuff. It is.
Love
it's
it,
just that it jumps out at you, you know, at people that draw for a living much more than people that... I can't even draw a straight line.
Do you see the mistakes, Mark?
Are
you noticing the glitches, or do they just sail right by you?
Sometimes.
Not that there are any glitches, but if there were.
This one holds together, in my opinion. I get really into the story, and things like that are very well done, so this one I'm happy with.
It's a lot of work whenever we have, and Mark, you can talk about that, whenever we have a rack of magazines like that.
Oh, yeah. Pencil mileage, we call it.
Pencil mileage.
Yeah.
And we pitch for hours to come up with those freeze frames that just went by.
Yeah.
Funny Death Sport magazines. or hopefully funny death sport magazine.
All right, get in there.
This is one of the more insane cheats in history.
Yeah. Well, we got everything we need on you.
It's all a pizza.
Excuse me.
What? This better be a
pizza. That's a funny read. Right there.
Actually, I'm interested in becoming a police officer.
This is a joke that I remember writing, that they had a laugh for a very, very long time. And obviously, I liked it so much, I let them laugh for an incredibly long time. And it's just this crazy twist on that joke where they say, "Welcome aboard" at the end.
Welcome aboard.
There really is no problem with her becoming a cop just with asking. And at the end, we'll talk about it again, but it's a joke. The joke is repeated. It literally makes no sense at the end, but for some reason it makes me laugh every time because it makes no sense. It's completely Dada-esque. It's when she quits. They laugh like that again and then say, "Sorry to lose you." But it just makes no sense, but it is funny. I don't know why. Someone will have to explain to me why I find it funny, but it does make me laugh.
All right, you scrawny beanpoles. Becoming a cop is not something that happens overnight. It takes one solid weekend of training to get that badge.
Forget about the badge!
This guy's a little frightening.
Guns!
Hey, I told
that, by the way, is Dan. Very sweet, quiet Dan, but he can become very angry.
He has so many people inside of him.
He does.
Our Dan.
And that makes me mad.
That's the voice that comes out if you keep Dan even like 3 minutes past his time.
Right?
And he has to leave, you know.
And if I don't get my medication.
You know what I think is brilliant? It's that Marge is really good at everything that she tries.
She's in great physical shape. I mean, she has a killer body.
Killer body.
And she
when she takes her clothes off, it turns out it's a killer body.
It is.
Yeah.
Right,
and this
right.
shows that she's in great physical shape. I mean, she's a great cop right out of the box here.
I got a call from Korea when they were animating this because they didn't know how to have the shell come out of the gun. Because apparently, by law, they can't have a gun in Korea.
Oh.
And so, of course, this call came to me at 3 in the morning, woke me up, and I'm like, "You want to know what?"
And how... obviously, somebody speaks English well enough to be able to convey this confusion to you.
Yes.
And you are able then to say it back to them, and they go, "Oh, I get it."
Yes, and finally we kind of advise them to, although they're not allowed to have guns, they can have movies. So we told them to go watch a movie, a Mel
Gibson
movie.
Do they
Gibson
then fax you intermediate drawings to say, "Is this how it goes?"
I basically had to describe that it comes out of the little port on the side, that it's an automatic weapon, and it slides back.
But you did better than that. You sent them a bunch of guns so that they could see, and then we didn't hear from them again. I don't know what happened. I hope they understood how to use them. The Magic Eye, are the Magic Eye things still out? They were huge at the time.
Yeah, at that time they were big.
This.
We had a design issue where some of our designers wanted to have Marge's hair all the way to the top with the cap on the top. And I thought it was a really awkward way for framing for shots like this.
It wouldn't have been good.
It would not have been good.
That wouldn't have gotten passed.
No. We would have we would have changed it.
We would we didn't want it to look comical. We wanted her to be a real cop. And basically we're playing her as a real cop, and then everything around her is comical. You know,
we've done the thing where we perched a hat on top of the pile of hair.
But we'll only do it for a short periods of time.
Yeah,
it gets
tired of it really quick.
Yeah. Got Donut Land. When they fry up a fresh batch, call it in. Keneally and Earhart, back them up. Fitz and Garcia, it's your turn to sleep in. And Simpson. Seeing how this is your first day, you're inexperienced and vulnerable, your beat is Junkieville and Bumtown.
This, of course, is the Hill Street Blues ripoff, totally legal version of the Hill Street Blues theme by Alf, and I think done a very, very lovely job, by the way.
Confidentiality. Wouldn't call it a ripoff, more of an homage.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. An homage costs more money, but whatever you want. And a great little performance by Lionel Hutz there, and our good.
By the way, Hill Street Blues, what a great show that was, huh?
It was fantastic.
Is that anywhere that's not being broadcast?
It plays in like on TBS or something like that. In fact, weeknights at 8, Sundays at 10. And no, I have no idea, but. That was, it's a good example of how TV works. You know, both Cheers and Hill Street Blues, on the first years they were on, were the lowest rated shows on TV.
Is that
Cheers
nice?
Was like 73, number 73, when there was only 74 shows, and Hill Street Blues was 74. And it was only because of the genius that is Grant Tinker that he sat with those shows, not caring what the ratings were, and letting the audience have time to discover them. It often takes about a year to discover a really great show, and that's like the history of the Dick Van Dyke Show and MASH and Mary Tyler Moore, and they don't do that anymore, and that's why most TV sucks and needs to be destroyed. Okay, but we're not
Ladies different. And gentlemen, you have just heard a typical conversation by a TV comedy writer. This is what we talk about in the writing room all the time.
How much TV sucks, and we apologize, but we're not involved in that. We're giving you good stuff here. And why is this stuff good? Because the network is not particularly involved in this stuff. The Simpsons is because of Jim Brooks, and right in the beginning, you know, we had this freedom, you know, to put a vision on the screen that was uncompromised.
That's it. Most of the network wrote half of these jokes.
The network did write half of the jokes in this particular episode.
No, The Simpsons is a fluke in that it's obviously done certainly with the clout of Jim Brooks saying we want doing this independently, but also with the rise of the Fox network. We came along exactly at the right time, and the Fox network was looking to try something that would make itself different from all the other networks, and we were there. So
that's absolutely true.
They supported the show.
They did support the show, but even in the beginning, wasn't a certain amount of still a lot of fear and reluctant support of the show?
Well, it's constant fear. Oh, it's always fear.
It's always fear-based.
They didn't even think at the very beginning whether or not the show could, we could tell a single story over the course of a half hour.
Right.
That it would have to be three short cartoons. Hmm. Because, you know, people couldn't have that long...
Yes, because no one had ever heard of the Flintstones, because they're in the TV business as executives, and of course that wasn't something they'd ever heard of.
Actually, I think one of the reasons why the show got picked up as a TV series is there were finally some network executives who were young enough to have remembered watching the Flintstones as kids, and so...
Saw that it could work. Possible. Yeah, it was a precedent set.
Garth and Sear, I think, I would
this,
say.
This is a very sinister a joke.
Quarter of the show.
Just dear, you'll wreck Daddy's fun. Bringing
in the sheaves. Bringing John and David, where'd this gag come from?
This just came out of a real nasty, nasty joke, right, John?
Yeah, I don't think it was in my original script. Probably a lot of people were very upset about being there very, very late at night.
So the hostility gets twisted into
really
a very
awful,
nasty joke. Again, fantastic acting with Dan.
The little ad-libs there. This is all ad-lib near the end that you
it
clearly
is.
Kept.
That's all Dan's ad-lib at the end, and it just was making me laugh so hard when we were recording this.
I think Jace Richdell might have written that guy.
It's very possible that Jace Richdell...
No, that thing with Barney, was that referring to something else? I haven't been watching the screen. I've been watching you, David.
I really shouldn't dress in such revealing clothes.
That's exactly.
Should I? I have to keep it. Oh, I'll answer that in a second. But this McGriff crime dog was because McGruff turned us down. Even though we weren't making fun of it, it was a positive. They didn't want to be associated with this show. They were scared to death of it. And so we came up with a completely different crime dog that also bit crime. It doesn't take a bite out of crime. It only bites it. And it's Griff, not Gruff. Totally illegal, can't touch us. I'm sorry, Matt, you were asking about Barney?
I was just wondering, it was a little throwaway thing. Hey, I have a question for John. Now, what have you taken from The Simpsons over to King of the Hill?
Oh, gee, I mean, we tried to make King of the Hill very different from The Simpsons.
Yeah, so, I mean, is it difficult, or was it difficult? Or?
It was difficult to slow it down and make moments pay much more rather than rushing, rather than trying to fill it up like we always did in The Simpsons.
Right.
The Simpsons was always how many jokes you can get into a line, let alone a page.
Right.
Aw, man.
Hey, hurry it up with the cards, Lenny. I've got you propped at 2 miles per hour.
Come on, put that away. Those radar guns give you cancer.
All the more reason to hurry up.
All the more reason to hurry up. Something that George Meyer particularly loved. We haven't done. We haven't seen the piece with Molman in jail yet, have we?
No, it's coming though.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Is that in this episode?
Yes.
That's one of my all-time favorite lines from Lovejoy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's a great line.
Thank you.
Oh, good.
That was that whole sequence. Yeah, it was a great nightmarish thought of mine. And well, we'll see it when we get there.
I repeat that line a lot.
It's very handy, yes. It's very handy. Especially if you have children, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm still all those things. Only now I'm cleaning up the city, sewing together the social fabric, and unplugging the clogs of our legal system.
You know what's funny is that the Simpsons always seem to find themselves in situations where they think they're going to get what they want, and then they realize they don't really want that anymore. It's quite brilliant. It's sort of like life.
Well, that's the great, you know, you've really hit what I think an important message of this show is, and a message that I always try and do on the show is, life is not going to go as you plan. It's going to get screwed up. You're not going to win, but that's okay. That's all right. You have to, you know, you have to be okay with that because that's the nature of it all the time.
And but they always
the shows that promise you're going to win all the time, I think, are evil. You know, we need a show where you see that things go wrong, and that's what happens for most people, and that's okay, and you can get through
right.
that and still be happy. Homer is the happiest guy in the world, and you know, he has a very difficult life on.
Well, when it's like the Rolling Stones song goes, you can't always get what you want,
but you get what
you
need.
But you might get what you need.
That just costs $150,000 to say that line. That's how much the rights to those.
But that's how much we care about these DVD commentaries, that we'll pay that.
We'll pay it gladly.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I can't remember who came up with that line first, the Rolling Stones or Dan. I mean, it's not clear. It's never clear.
They may owe us money. Is that what you're saying?
By the way, Dan, this is also a fantastic sound that Dan makes right here. He's waiving his right to be silent right there.
All right, Simpson, you're free to go.
I have to say that when I sit there and watch these episodes with my wife, she does go, what an idiot. To me, of course, for doing the show. No.
There's your scene. The worst thing that happens to you to coming up.
Consider yourself lucky.
Are you really allowed to execute people in a local jail?
From this point on, no talking.
From this point on, no talking.
No talking.
Is that you can button any scene with that line.
You're
That's
coming,
a great thing.
It's particularly strong if someone wants to kill you and you're trying to argue your way out of it. They say, no, there's no talking from this point until you're dead. It's not a good moment. It's not a good position to be in. I'm sorry to explain it, but there it is.
And I'll stay on my side.
This is the old Lucy gag with the twist. He didn't think right before he...
When Marge first told me she was going to the police academy, I thought it'd be fun and exciting, you know, like that movie, Spaceballs. But instead, it's been painful and disturbing like that movie, Police Academy. Hi, Homer.
So we got to call Police Academy painful and disturbing, which to us, that movie is relative, especially the sequels. I mean, maybe the first one was all right. The sequels can only be described as painful and disturbing. We're making this the most expensive commentary ever. Libel, stealing, Rolling Stones,
morning,
it's all good.
I'll get it for you, Homer.
Who's that?
That's Herman. Herman.
Oh, right, the guy with one arm.
I mean, Harry
faded away in the last couple of years.
It's a big town, Lisa. You don't have to know everybody.
It's a big town.
If you notice, there's a couple things about Herman that I'd like to point out. The voice by Harry sounds very much like George Bush Sr.
That is right.
Right?
That is
and
right.
And the face, but although the he does have two arms, seems to me a little bit like a young, vibrant John Swartzwelder. A little bit.
Who's he? Which voice is that?
Herman.
The face.
The face
design. A little bit. I'm not saying. I mean, Schwarzwelder.
But it's been
very
so
handsome.
Many years since Schwarzwelder's been vibrant.
John Swartzwelder also will pop up sometimes as statues.
Yes, there is a statue. There's a John Swartzwelder statue. That's
and
right.
A mountain is named after him.
Now, who thought of this, that it would be a jeans.
I think it's something that we came up with in the room.
I think that's George Meyer once again, probably.
Is it
really?
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's right up there with sugar.
This is funny.
There was such an explosion of jeans on the market at that time. Like, every designer was getting into them, and it was right at the beginning of that. So it seemed very ripe to...
designers like Calvin Klein, Gloria Vanderbilt, or Antoine Bugleboy. These are the people who saw an overcrowded marketplace and said, me too.
I think that was George's line there, yes.
I think that's a very good idea.
Oh, no. It's Gloria Vanderbilt.
And again, very nice lighting and very nice composition there, Mark.
Well, I probably had nothing to do with it, but thank you.
As you'll see in this show, basically nobody has anything to do with anything. It just sort of happens, right?
Yeah.
It's too late for me, Marge. Sell the jeans and live like a queen.
Is Bart home?
That's a great gag.
Well, I guess I am putting up the Halloween decorations a little early. Criticism accepted.
Flanders gets shot at a lot in the series. He does, especially I think in these two seasons. that I did. I had a lot of bullets heading his way for whatever reason.
You know, there's a lot of fan complaints about inconsistencies. I love the treehouse. Sometimes it's right next to their bedroom.
Sometimes it's
a long distance like this. Sometimes you can hop onto the branch next to it.
We've made their yard, you know, anywhere from a couple hundred square feet to hundreds of acres. I mean, it totally depends on what we need. When we had the trampoline, it was the size of Tara.
Back at the very beginning of the series, we actually, remember we did a blueprint of the house?
Yes.
And the map of the neighborhood, we're going to make everything really consistent. We need to go from the kitchen to the living room.
It's true, and you know, Matt and I have talked about this before, but it is the flexible reality of it. We move things around, we make it work for the moment, and the physicality. There's another show in season 6, which we'll talk about when it happens, when you see Homer has this horrible commute to work, huge amounts of traffic, and when he parks far, far back in the lot, it's actually
right up against his house. Yes, I remember.
Of course, that doesn't happen every day, it's just that particular episode.
That one actually irritated the hell out of me, that particular joke.
Here's the most Dada-esque moment in this particular episode, and one of the most Dada-esque ever. See Wiggum's hair? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yes, and his hair has changed.
I'll fix it for free.
Okay, we'll fix it for free for the DVD, so maybe you won't even know what we're talking about. But if we didn't fix it, you'll see his hair change color.
Ah, crap, I fold.
Now, is that an ad-lib from Hank?
No, that was probably a 2 a.m. finish for us.
That's great.
And this is the long version of Alf's homage to the Mike Post theme for Hill Street Blues.
Homage? Listen to him, Mr. Fancy.
That was from Matt.
We're trying to get out of court. Okay.
I'm
just doing a callback from the scene in the show.
Oh,
garage.
It's a car.
You see, Dan could do
it. I'm actually watching these shows.
Huh?
I'm not talking. I'm just watching the cartoon.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to do. Any final thoughts from anybody?
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Oh, that was sweet. Oh, good.
Also, David, obey the law. That was the real theme.
Okay, obey the law, people.
If you travel the highway of crime, you have to pay the toll.
Shh.